Blog Talk Radio.
My co-host got Kanata Gray is out there on the been out on the campaign trail, been trying to figure out how we're gonna do these. We're gonna try to figure out how we're gonna run campaigns in this era of social distancing. This brings us into the topic of our show today: the politics of crisis, pandemic. It's pretty much self-explanatory, you know. We all know, we've been watching the news, we've been affected all in some type of way right now by the coronavirus outbreak that is hitting globally. We are watching the response of how not only our government, but other governments around the world and even locally are responding to this outbreak of what is being called the pandemic by the CDC and the World Health Organization. Now, to me, the response should have been the most apolitical thing that could have happened in America. There shouldn't have been no liberal responses, there shouldn't have been no conservative responses. There should be nothing but take care of the American people. But that's not what's going on. And it's just not the Republicans who are guilty. There are Democrats who are attempting to a political football out of this. Not saying all of us, but there are some of us, particularly those of us who are playing presidential politics, trying to say which, you know, nominee, which person will make the better nominee in the era of the coronavirus. Are there political missteps that have taken place? Absolutely. But it has been a wild week. We came into Monday morning, coronavirus is here. We were still, folks were making jokes about, you know, the coronavirus. And some people still are making those jokes. But a turn was, we took a turn about Tuesday night, Wednesday morning. You could feel the change taking place, particularly after it sunk in that we were going to be banning travel to Europe, which we had already banned travel to China. And the fact that even though we've done all these bans, it still is growing. We all watched as they start unloading people from that cruise ship. And here in Georgia, they brought these people here and put them at Dobbins Reserve Air Force Base, which is north of the Atlanta area. There's a state park that has been converted into an isolation camp at Hard Labor State Park, which is in eastern Georgia, just east of Atlanta. And, you know, we got people who are those of you who follow me on social media have heard me say how diverse and political views my friends list is. And I see those who say, oh, here goes the FEMA camps. They're coming. Then you got the other folks talking about martial law and all of this and the third. Now, this being a crisis of the proportion that it is. Now, we've heard all the different people speak, pundits talking. We've heard medical personnel, we've heard non-medical personnel. And I'm particularly talking about politics. I'm not even looking at it from a medical perspective because that's not the wheelhouse of this show. We don't, you know, I can bring on, I got plenty of experts in my friends list. You know, I have epidemiologists in my list. I have medical doctors. And I got finance people. But the premise of this show has always been the politics behind most things. And politics has an intertwining with economics and other things that take place in our space. Regulation, how do we deal with each other socially, is really born out in our politics. And we are showing the major fractures in the American political universe in this today. Now, I was very surprised that the U.S. Congress actually passed a bipartisan bill to deal with this, which should have been expected. But you can see the politics in it. We're going to start off with that first because there's a lot in that bill and there's a lot missing because one of the things that I found most striking was that even though this legislation has passed and will most likely pass the Senate, there are certain key things that are lacking. Hold on a second, everybody. Hold on a second. Okay, I'm back. Folks keep forgetting that I'm doing the shutdown. In fact, I was on the show. Got phone calls coming in. But, we looking at this act. One of the things that is missing is that it's still, even in some provisions, there are major gaps in the American people who are covered by it. But I got the bill sitting in front of me right now, and you know, American is only 8 pages, but I'm gonna go through it. I'm gonna scan through it, and give you the whole point. Okay, this is officially H.R. 6201, Families First Coronavirus Response Act. The legislation provides paid leave, establishes free testing, protects public health workers, and provides important benefits to children and families. Division A, Second Coronavirus Preparedness Response Supplemental Appropriations Act of 2020. That's the official title. And this was prepared by the Democratic staff of the House Committee on Appropriations. Title one is Agricultural Development, Food and Drug Administration, and related agencies. Now, one of the first things we see in this bill is food and nutrition services, because, you know, one of the things that's going to happen is that, you know, we got people who are going to need food assistance over time. And Special Supplemental Nutrition Program for Women and Infants, which we know as WIC, will get an additional $500 million to provide access to nutritious food to low-income pregnant women and mothers with young children who lose their jobs or laid off due to this emergency. The second provision here is the Emergency Food Assistance Program, called is $400 million to assist in local food, to assist local food banks to meet increased demand for low-income Americans during the emergency. Of the total, $300 million for the purchase of nutritious foods, and $100 million is to support storage and distribution of food. In addition, the legislation includes a general provision that allows the Department of Agriculture to approve state plans to provide emergency SNAP assistance to households with children who will otherwise receive free or reduced lunch if their schools are closed due to the coronavirus emergency. And in order to be eligible, the child's school must be closed for no less than 5 consecutive days. So most children are probably recovered under this, particularly in what I know about in the Atlanta area, because most schools are going to be shut down to at least April 1st. At least. And some of the rural schools are starting to shut down, which we're going to talk about then. Nutrition assistance for the U.S. territory. $100 million USDA provides nutrition to Puerto Rico, American Samoa, and the Commonwealth of Northern Marianas Islands in response to the public health emergency. Okay, then you got Title II of this bill, which is Labor, Health, Human Services, Education-related agencies. Emergency Paid Sick Days Program includes $5 million for the Department of Labor to administer the Emergency Paid Sick Days Program. Senior Nutrition Program includes $250 million for Senior Nutrition Program in the administration of community living. Provide approximately $25 million additional home-delivered and prepackaged meals to low-income seniors who depend on senior nutrition programs in their community. This funding will provide meals to low-income seniors who are homebound, have disabilities, who have multiple chronic illnesses, as well as caregivers for seniors who are homebound. The ACL, which is the Administration for Community Living, has nutrition grants provided to states, territories, and eligible to tribal organizations, and already serves 2.4 million individuals annually. Nearly two-thirds of the recipients are home-delivered meals. We report these meals as half of their food intake for the day. Okay, so then you got Title III, which is bill-wide, and it's technical budgetary provisions, and, you know, which is Division B, nutrition waivers. Title I is Maintain Essential Access for Lunch Students Act. So basically, we got schools that are being closed down, and we're trying to make sure that we can provide school lunch programs for those who are now, a lot of school systems, particularly here in the Atlanta area, have already, that was a no-brainer, they hit off the rip with having the ability to feed the children while they were out. So free meals will be given out. They got those are regional hubs. They'll set up at certain schools where you can go pick up a meal between, you know, most of the hours, like 10 and 12 every day. So that's happening. Then you got the new SNAP, which is, you know, basically food stamps for low-income jobless workers. They're moving the work provision from right now so that people can go in and get what they need. For as SNAP workers. Then we got Division C, which is the Healthcare Worker Protection Act. They're going with some emergency standards. This section requires Occupational Safety and Health Administration OSHA to issue temporary standards within 30 days, requiring employers within the health sector and any other sector, which either OSHA or the Disease Control and Prevention designated at elevated risk. So, and some of these protocols were established during the SARS event from 2007. And so they taking and kicking some of these in. Then you got amendments to the Social Security Act, which allow emergency temporary standards to certain facilities receiving Medicare funds. So, I mean, I guess, and I'm not a expert on this, and if somebody is, about how money is distributed to the healthcare facilities when it comes to Medicare funds, you know, if you understand this better than I do, because I'm kind of getting into the whole, you know, really, so everybody goes healthcare facilities doesn't get Medicare funds, I guess, yeah, that's how you stand. And so if you know anything about this, call into the show. Number is 563-999-3560. You got an understanding that will help us out. Then we got the Emergency Leave Act of 2020. This section defines an emergency leave day as a day in which the individual is unable to work due to one of the four qualifying reasons related to this coronavirus. That the worker has a current diagnosis of coronavirus. The worker is quarantined through self-imposed quarantine at the instruction of healthcare providers for government officials to prevent spread. The worker is caring for another person who has coronavirus or is under quarantine. All the workers caring for a child or unable to care for themselves due to coronavirus, closing their school, child care facility, or other care program. The also define what eligible individuals for somebody who is working for 30 days before they were impacted by the coronavirus. Then there's emergency paid benefits. Now, this is the part here that if I was reading correctly, kind of bothered me. This section created new federal agency, federal emergency paid leave benefit program. Eligible workers receive a benefit for a month of 3 months, which they must take 14 or more days of leave from their work due to qualifying COVID-19 reasons. Days when individual receives pay from their employer, regular wage, sick pay, another time off. Or unemployment does not count as the purpose. The program will be administered by the Social Security Administration with the following specification. Benefit amount, 2/3 of the individual's average monthly earnings based on the most recent year wages, while self-employment income for which registers are readily available, capped $4,000. The program of benefit period, the benefits will be available for a leave that occurs from January 19th, the date of the first U.S. coronavirus diagnosis, through 1 year after the bill's enactment. Retroactive benefits can be paid retroactively application be filed up to 6 months after the next. Applications will be taken online, by phone, by mail. The individuals will not visit SSA field office to apply. Payments in most cases will be issued electronically. Program integrity. The applicants must attest that they meet certain criteria for eligibility and existing penalties for fraud and misrepresentation to social security benefits applied to the federal emergency pay and leave benefit program. Okay, the program will operate in coordination with other relevant benefit leave programs, including protection of existing benefit rights, reduction based on receipt of state or private paid leave. So if your company gives you money, or you're receiving money from another benefit, you get dollar for dollar reductions based on what that is. Reimbursement grants to the state. And this doesn't affect SSI under any, does not affect. So if you got somebody who's only receiving SSI, this does not count as income. And so it doesn't affect your SSI. And the benefits under this program are not subject to income tax, federal income tax. This is a big one. Then you got unemployment compensation. There's emergency transfers for unemployment compensation administration. There's $500 million to additional staffing, technology system administrative calls, and all the basic requirements. Require employers to provide notification potential UIL to $1 million work. Ensure that workers have at least 2 ways to apply for benefits and notify applicants when applicants have received the process. The application cannot be processed, provide information on how to ensure a successful process. $5 million reserved for emergency grants to states with at least a 10% increase in unemployment. Temporary assistance states with advance. So they get access to interest-free loans to help pay it. Now that bothers me. We're gonna give them interest-free loans. But basically, you want them to pay this back. You want the government to pay it. You want the states to pay their back. I'm not understanding that. But yeah. Okay. I guess if you wanted the money before the government could take out a loan. Then you got paid sick days, public health emergencies, and personal family care act. It requires all employers to allow postgraduate accrued 7 days of paid sick leave and provide an additional 14 days available immediately in the event of any public health emergency, including the current coronavirus. It requires all employees to provide an additional 14 days of paid sick leave immediately at the beginning of the public health emergency, including the current crisis. Issues paid sick leave covers days when your child's school is closed due to public health emergency, when your employer is closed due to public health emergency, or if you or a family member is quarantined or isolated during a public health emergency. It reimburses small businesses defined as business with 50 or fewer employees with a cost of 5 to 14 days. So this is the thing, and this is where you have to read the bill. Because, see, when I read this originally online, it made it seem like that the only people who could get this benefit were the people who were with 50 employees or less. Well, this, all this is saying is, and this is where reporting gets out of hand, and people need to pay attention, is that the bill says that this requires all employees. The only people that are getting reimbursed are small businesses. in articles that I have been reading online from reputable news sources such as NBC, MSNBC, CNN, whatnot, have made this sound like, you know, the larger company wasn't going to have to provide it. No, what the larger company is doing is they have to absorb the cost of doing it. And what this does in this provision here is actually reimburse smaller businesses. So that was the problem that I was having in the beginning. Like, okay, so you got half of the people which are not even going to be able to take this. But now reading the actual bill, the only thing that really applies to businesses with 50 or fewer employees is that they get reimbursed for the cost of doing these 14 additional paid sick days. Okay, and then it enables construction employees to receive sick pay based on hours they work for multiple contractors. The bill makes effective immediately so that employers in areas covered under the qualifying public health upon enactment can take 14 days of paid sick leave in order to address this COVID-19 or the coronavirus. Then you got your health provision, which is covered, you know, making sure the health plans cover the testing and it be provided for at no charge, waiving cost sharing under the Medicaid program for certain businesses related to the testing, waiving cost sharing under the Medicare Advantage program, coverage of no cost sharing under Medicaid and CHIP, laboratory reimbursement for diagnostic testing, treatment of personal respiratory protective devices as covered measures, TRICARE and coverage for veterans and federal civilians, no cost sharing for Native and Indigenous population, receiving contract health services, and an emergency FAP, M-A-P inquiry, which is federal medical assistance percentage. So that's been taken. Then you got your budgetary effect, which that, you know, you get your temporary effects, you know, budgetary provisions that have to be made, which they now have to, I guess, vote on in the U.S. Senate. So we had talked about this, and that was one of the things that bothered me early on, was the fact that that we had this play in the media about, oh, only half of Americans were going to be able to get these benefits because they were only shouldering up small business and looked like the big corporations were getting off. Actually, larger corporations are going to shoulder this burden on their own, which is perfectly okay because they have the money to be able to do it. Now, that being the case, I'm not as mad as I once was about this bill. Because we are going to have to do a little bit more research. Because like I said, there's a politicalization of this situation. It's an election year. And let's be honest, most of us on the left, the vast majority of us on the left, like 99.5% of us cannot stand the President of the United States. We can't. And anything we can do to dig on him, we will. And so we're doing that, and some of it is being slightly irresponsible. Now, he brings a lot of it on himself. But the reporting, you know, like I said, the reporting that I read, particularly on the Paid Leave Act, made it seem like he was finna get fucked. And that's not necessarily the case. Now, with that being said, in some areas we are, because see, the thing is that right now It's up to companies whether or not they want to close that, they want to shut a door to stabilize the situation. And I'm already hearing it. You know, I'm a business owner. I get it. You know, but at the end of the day, we can't make profit if there are no people. This is something that resonates in my mind coming back to from the 2014 campaign for U.S. Senate in Georgia. And there was a debate, U.S. Senate debate in the primary. It was mostly Republicans, and the candidate I was looking for at the time, Dr. Brad, was the only Democrat that was at this debate. You kept hearing, we was talking about minimum wage and living wage, and we kept hearing Republicans use the word consumers and workers as if they are two different people. And Dr. Rand at the time made them see that the workers and the consumers are the same person. So if you got tens of millions of consumers that are sick, you also have tens of millions of workers that are sick. If people can't spend money, then you keeping your doors open trying to make every little bit you can make when we can take and shut everything down, because we know pretty much how the incubation period of this thing works. So 14, 24, you know, 2 to 3 weeks of reduced exposure could really slow this thing down, allow it to die out. But if we keep making people come into contact with one another, you know, that has an issue. And everybody's having a problem with that because they're worried about money. And I get it. We need it. We understand it. This makes the argument that, you know, I supported with Andrew Yang. He's running for president. I support the idea of UBI. I understand the problems with it because there are some people who will never try to do any better than their UBI. And they would live their life based on their UBI. And there's other of us who would take UBI and we would go, whoa, let's do, you know, this gives me a space cushion to do other great things. And we would invest that money and turn it around and flip it because we're just entrepreneurial like that. We, you know, that's the hustle. And now we're looking at having to do this because we have to. See how many companies are now, you know, giving their service away for free for the next 30 days, 60 days, not turning off utility, allowing workers to work from home who were never allowed to work from home. And this is the thing. Now that you're afraid for your life, you're allowing it to happen. Particularly this work from home thing. How much overhead costs you can save by allowing certain workers to work from home? We have the technology to do it. You got computers and internet, you can do it. You know, the basic same thing, this is your offices are not co-located. I mean, politically, I've not worked in my political work, I've not worked co-located with anybody. God, you know, I've never had a fully established campaign office somewhere where everybody went to work. I prefer people to work from wherever they were in the field. Got internet, keep it pushing. Now, every once in a while, hey, you come together. Like real small races, yeah, everybody come together, man an office, just so people have contact. You know, you have one person sitting in the office, or two people sitting in the office so that they can make contact with volunteers. But other than that, there's no need for everybody sitting together in the office. So we need to be in the fucking field anyway. So working from home was perfectly okay. It actually allowed me to be able to get more work out of you because, hell, most political workers are gung-ho like that anyway. The more time they get, less time we got to spend in a car, the better. And it's just also, you know, better for the environment and everything. And that's a whole other situation we can talk about later, is how this is affecting the environment. And that's a political situation itself. You know, now you see air quality clearing up over China and in Italy, where they completely shut down the countries. It's been, you know, it's been a wonderful thing. But let's talk about again, let's go back to the political ramifications. Here in Georgia, yesterday, we postponed and delayed our presidential preference primary, which was supposed to take place on March 24th, when early voting had started. And I was actually in the process of trying to figure out how I was going to vote, because I was supposed to go vote yesterday. And because of all the different things that was going on, I was unable to go vote. And I was still, okay, I might go ahead and just have to absentee ballot. And that just be safer, this, that, and the other. Anyway, vote by mail. And I'm hearing that as the parties were attempting to negotiate how this was going on, that the Georgia government, Secretary of State, did not want to do vote by mail. We already can do it if you got an absentee ballot. You already can vote by mail. We need to just make that a more accessible thing by just mailing ballots to people. If you are a registered voter in the state of Georgia, we send your ballot to your address. You don't have to request it. You got to ask for it. We just send it to you. Now, I promise you this, that will cause a higher turnout in voting, and I think that's what they're scared of. I can just vote. And I'm sure there's some concerns about some things about making sure that the right people are voting, stand up for third, blah, blah, blah. But there are ways of making sure. There could be ways of making sure the integrity of the election. And that's one of the things that we really need to look out for in the future. Because now we're learning that there are things we can do. Now, I'm not a big fan of the social distancing thing becoming something that's prevalent, because I feel like we're already losing our humanity. But we got to be able to do things without everybody always having to assemble, and it would just be more efficient. And people participating in democracy, it's not a bad thing, as long as we go about business, educating people about the politics in their lives. So, again, you know, the election has been postponed here, delayed. So we'll be voting on May 19th, which would have been the general primary date anyway. Now, that's going to have affected some of the special elections that were supposed to take place, like in the metro area, and the DeKalb County Sheriff's had a special election. So I don't really know how that's going to work as one election was filled with the unexpired term. The next election, particularly in DeKalb, was to get the Democratic nominee, which was basically who loved the sheriff and who the sheriff was. And that race is ongoing, so I don't know how that's going to affect how that's going to work. You're going to be voting for the same person twice on the ballot, basically. So I don't know how that's going to work. That's going to be interesting. You're just going to have to wait and see on that. Tonight, Joe Biden and Bernie Sanders will be going through their debate in Arizona, which will be not in front of a live audience, which is going to be interesting. And I'm sure a lot of the questions are going to be centered around the response to this virus. And how you know us having universal health care would have affected how us having UBI, all of this and social programs that the president is talking about for the last 10 years are going to be on stage tonight. Sanders gave Joe some homework. Let's see if Joe did the homework. Let's see if Bernie can get some traction on this, because a lot of folks say, oh, now this is what socialism will fix, this is what Corbyn. No. No. And, I mean, you got universal health care in nearby every country that has been affected before. Italy has a national health care service. China is a communist country. You can't get no more fucking socialist than that. Hell, matter of fact, China really isn't a communist country anymore. It's a fucking socialist country. Because there's elements, they're not even really on the full communist path anymore. So that didn't stop the outbreak. None of the countries which we like to point out to had their social systems have not prevented outbreaks. Think about it. All right, so I'm pulling up a map. And the map that I'm pulling up is the CDC map. Okay, now the CDC map that I got up has all the countries that have a case of the coronavirus there. Okay. So firm cases. All right. So every last one of the Scandinavian countries has an outbreak. Okay. Every last one of them. So, and those are the countries that we like to point out for that socialism. They all have had out. The entirety of Europe has had out. You got China and Vietnam outbreak. We don't know what's going on in North Korea. In their isolation, there may not have been an outbreak. I can see them shutting down their damn borders. You got places like Myanmar, another dictatorship we don't know. Most of the hot spots in the world, we don't see what's going on. Syria, Somalia, Yemen, we can't see. They're not on the map. You got a couple of countries in Central America that doesn't have any outbreak. Venezuela, as of right now, It doesn't seem that I think it's the Guyana or Suriname. Look like Uruguay doesn't have any. Africa, the map is starting to fill out in Africa. Ghana recorded his first case 2 days ago. There were two cases. Most of the Maghreb, except for Libya, which is another unstable country, isn't showing up. We got countries of the Central African, Central Asian steppe, Turkmenistan, Uzbekistan. You don't see those countries on the map. So, in Greenland, another isolated nation, it looks like they may, when I'm checking out the Caribbean, Cuba has cases. Jamaica, Trinidad and Tobago, I don't see the Dominican Republic, I don't see Haiti, I don't see the Turks and Caicos. I don't see the Bahamas. So, again, certain types of isolation has probably paid off. Definitely, you know, then you look at just the whole, the world as an entirety. Most of these countries that we have on this list have universal health care. So that political argument, as much as I understand we want to make it, is a falsehood. It wouldn't have changed anything. Cuba has one of the best healthcare systems there is. And I'm getting my, I'm looking at my information off of CDC. And we're a health organization. And there are situational reports that are there right now. You gave me, I'm going to look at the most recent one from the 14th of March, which is Situation Report 54. 12 new countries, territories, have reported cases of coronavirus in less than 4 hours. The Director General said yesterday that Europe has now become the epicenter of the pandemic, with more cases and deaths than the rest of the world combined, apart from China. Many countries are now acting on 8 pillars of WHO strategic preparedness response plan. For more details, you can click and see what that is. And I'll do that in a second. The World Health Organization published a guidance on clinical management for severe acute respiratory infection when the disease, when the coronavirus disease is suspected on March 13th. The document provides clinicians with updated interim guidance on time and effective state supportive management for patients with suspected and confirmed coronavirus. For more details, you can click into that. Right now, the assessment, the situation in numbers, right now there are 142,539 confirmed cases on the planet. 9,769 of those are new. 5,393 deaths. 438 of those were new. There were 81,021 confirmed cases in China. 18 of those were new. 3,194 deaths in China. 14 of those were new. Outside of China, and this is where the numbers get interesting. There's 61,518 confirmed cases of coronavirus outside of China. 7,051 of those are new. Now, if you look at the global number was 97,900 there was 9,769 new cases. So you take China, their new cases, their cases, you almost get a wash there of the new cases. Yeah, most of the new cases are taking place outside of China, right? There are 2,199 deaths, 424 of those are new. There are 134 countries, territories, and areas, and 12 of those were new as of yesterday. And the risk assessment is very high for not just China, regional levels, but on global level. They have maps on this in this report to show you the severity in each nation that has so far had this. They have breakdowns of populations of the cities that have been affected, particularly those in China. Then it breaks it down to territories of countries and how many people and where the transmission is coming from. For instance, the reporting, I'm looking at it, this is a territory outside of China. There's one confirmed case in Mongolia. It's an imported case, meaning that it was not local transmission. And it's been 4 days since they've had a last case confirmed. Now, let's go to the United States. There are 1,600 cases in the United States as of right now. And trying to get my bead. Total new cases right now are 414. There have been 41 total deaths, and there were 5 new deaths in the last, at the moment of this report. And there has been no gap in new cases. And that's one of the things we want to start looking at. How long does it take? Now, this map breaks us down. Now I'm starting to see where we're looking at the Caribbean. There are 5 cases in the Dominican Republic. There's been no deaths. There are 7 cases in Jamaica. All six of those are new. There's been 4 days since one of the last new cases was detected in the Dominican Republic. 3 brand new cases in Puerto Rico. Antigua and Bermuda there's one case. St. Vincent and the Grenadines, there's one case, and it's been a day since they've had another case. One brand new case in Trinidad and Tobago. Do not see the U.S. Virgin Islands. Still don't see Bermuda or the Bahamas. There's 26 cases in Mexico. 14 of those are new. You got territories. There's one new case in the Cayman. There's 6 cases in French Guiana. Now, you got St. Martin and St. Bellamy, which both have that. 1 and 2 cases, respectively. It's been 11 days since the cases were then, but those are being under investigation. And most of the cases in the Caribbean are import cases. They're not local transmission, except for in Cuba and the Dominican Republic. And if you look into the African region, okay, listen to Africa. There's 26 cases in Algeria, one new case. There's 17 cases in South Africa, no new cases, one day since the last reported case. Senegal, 10 cases, one day since the last new case. Burkina Faso, two cases, 3 days since the last case initiated. Now, those first three were local transmission. Burkina Faso was an import case. Cameroon, two cases, local transmission, no new transmissions, then 7 days since the last new case. The Democratic Republic of Congo, two cases, one new case. Nigeria, two cases, it's an import only, 5 days since the last known new case. The Ivory Coast, one case, then 2 days since the last case. Ethiopia has one, that's brand new. Gabon, one case, brand new. Ghana, one case, brand new. Guinea, one case, brand new. Kenya, one case, brand new. Togo, one case, been 7 days since the last. Transmission. And those, the date of last new case is interesting because as you start hitting that 14, 15 day mark, then you've gotten outside of the, how long it takes for there to be incubation. And from what I understand, that is what you're looking at. You want to see, okay, how long has been since the last case, because at that point, you may have stopped transmission. If I'm not correct on that, somebody let me know. Again, if you are out here and listening, you could call in at 563-999-3560. You know, we have to pay attention and look at the information for ourselves. And again, I'm going to share some of these sites on my personal Facebook page and on the Down South and Dirty page. So you can go look at these yourself, because it's interesting. You can get a day by day of actually what's going on. And that way, because the news agencies, I hate to say it, ain't trying. They trying to keep us glued to TV. And I don't necessarily think they try to make it this a sensational situation more than just trying to give us good information. And it's hard when you try to just stay in cycle. It gets kind of hard. So right now I'm posting the World Organization up on my Facebook right now. And you can, and I'm also posting a way back to find this situational reports. Yeah, I just did that. So you can find out from the World Health Organization exactly. You can read this underneath for yourself. I just posted it up on my Facebook. You know, it's just something that I think some of you may find interesting. And this is serious business, people. And we got to take it seriously. let's do what we can to stop the transmission of this stuff so we can get back to doing our regular craziness. Even if we, I don't think we ever gonna go back to regular crazy. But also, during this time, let's be very careful about how we politicize the situation. Because this is not a political situation. This is all the new stuff that we're dealing with as our new 21st century lives. Let's take care of one another. Let's love one another. Let's put back some of the hatefulness that we have toward each other. For those of us who are religious, let's pray for one another. Let's pray for a quick and positive end to this situation. Let's hope that it doesn't get any worse. And if it does, may the Lord give us strength and wisdom to tread through this path and this journey that we're going to undertake. This is Down South and Dirty. And yeah.